I despise your killing and raping. You're despicable.
Are you my judge?
It's just, you should be punished. I'm going to chop off your arm. So you ready?
Well, I'm ready. Ready for Asian Cinema Fusion. Hello, everybody. It's Paul Martinez, and I am back for another edition of Asian Cinema Fusion as we are back again to talk about four great films. Well, we always hope that they're four great films. I can promise you that there are four films. Can't always promise they're great, but we go into all these hoping that they will be. And what we're going to start today, as I told you guys last time, when I had recorded last time, I was going to see Ip Man 3, which I did, and we're going to start right off with Ip Man 3. Of course, from Hong Kong in 2016, directed by Wilson Yip, who we've talked about times in the past, SPL, Flashpoint, Bullets Over Summer. I promise you that review is coming. And starring the immortal Donnie Yen, who, of course, returns as Ip Man in this third installment of this incredible trilogy, really. Zhang Jin, who plays Cheng Tin Chi. Lin Hung, who plays Win Sing, Ip Man's wife. And Mike Tyson as simply Frank. If you're going to call him Frank, you might as well just call him Mike, in my opinion, but yes, Mike Tyson, if you don't know, and you probably should, it's all over social media and everything, plays a role in this film, and we're going to get a little bit to that in a minute. I'll give you, as I always do, my tagline for the film. And my tagline for this film is, sometimes it's your family that needs a hero. What's this about? Well, in the third and final installment of this very successful series, Ip Man must deal with a tragedy at home, as well as a rival who believes he is the true master of Wing Chun. This, and I've discussed this on social media with some people, but for me, this is my favorite of the trilogy. There was just so much I loved about this film. But top of the list is the story of Ip Man and his wife. In the first two films, the story is really about kung fu, about pride, national pride, personal pride. And there's some of that here, but this is very different. It's a love story, really. And it's about loss and family. And it's that dynamic that, in my opinion, really sets this apart from others. Now, I've spoken to some who felt, well, they didn't like this one because the martial arts scenes from part two with Sammo directing were better, or, you know. And I understand that. And I understand that many people who listen to my reviews are, you know, the martial art movie fans. And that's the stuff that drives them. And I can't knock anybody for that. I'm not going to argue about which film had better martial art, you know, fights or what have you. That is part of the film. Of course, we're talking about a film about Ip Man and the Wing Chun master. So, of course, this stuff matters. But when I look at a film, I look at it as a whole. I look at everything, the acting, the cinematography. Something which I don't talk a lot about, but I do take notice. It's something actually, something new that I've started to pay attention to. But it's all those things, you know. It's the score. It's the plot, you know. And the action, and, you know, it's everything mixed together into one whole. That's what is great about movies, is movies is not just someone sitting around a campfire and telling you a story. There's so much involved, especially in today's filmmaking, that makes a movie great. And there's so many elements. I mean, that's why, I mean, I'm sure if you're ever going to see those Marvel movies and you want to wait to get that little snippet after the credits, you sit there, and there's a lot of credits you sit through, isn't there? I mean, that's about 2-3 minutes, maybe even longer. They play like a whole song where the credits play, which, wow, a song's usually about 4-4.5 minutes. So all that is goes into, all those names you see of people you don't even pay attention to, the gaffer and what have you, all these people work tirelessly to make what you just saw. It's not, you know, it's That's what I love about movies. It takes so many people and so much hard work to come together to make, to me, what is artwork. Because I find to be films and even television shows, the good ones anyway, to be an art form. And I just feel that when I look at a film, I have to, you know, see all of that and understand all of that to understand the beauty of the art that I'm seeing. So that's my little soapbox moment for the show. But yeah, so like I said, I'm not going to argue about which fight scenes are better and which action scenes are better. We'll talk about the action scenes here. And I thought the martial arts did not disappoint. There's one fight in particular that stood out. And that is the 3 minutes of Donnie against Frank, played by Mike Tyson. This was just a fabulous sequence. I've actually watched the fight scene 3 times, as somebody was nice enough to post on social media that 3 minute scene. Of course, I saw it in the theater, and now I've seen it twice on social media, and every time, I just love it. I mean, the ferocity and power of Tyson against the skill and guile of Ip Man, just incredible. It's really, if you know, like I said, this is a great film for so many reasons, but if you want to see a great fight scene, that is a great fight scene. The acting was all top-notch. I'm going to be honest, with the aforementioned Tyson, you know, except for him. I'm not knocking the guy. I give him some credit. He delivered some lines in the native language, Chinese, I believe it was. I have to admit, I'm not very good at distinguishing Mandarin from Cantonese. But I believe the film was in Cantonese, and I thought he delivered the lines actually that he said in that language pretty well. But, I mean, he's not a skilled actor. He's not a trained actor. And so some of his stuff came off a little stiff when he spoke. But I'm not going to really make a big deal about it. I mean, you know, for what his role was for this film, which was an intimidating monster of a man, he did that well and convincingly well. So, also, when we talk about acting, we're going to talk about Lin Hung, who is amazing in this film. You know, she's the woman, she plays Wing Sing, who Ip Man's wife throughout the trilogy. And in this film, she was given so much more to work with, and she makes the most of it. A fine, fine actress. Really very impressed with what she did in this film. Not just delivering lines, because as I've said many times, acting is more than just delivering a line. Anybody can read a line. It's emoting with that line, and the proper emoting, you know, to give you the feel of, you know, do you believe if this person's sad when she recites her lines? Is she sad? Is she happy? You know, the facial expressions, all that's part of acting, and she just is really, really great at it in this film. Really stood out. I always felt she was underused in the first 2 parts of the trilogy. More just like a kind of a background eye candy deal. But not in this film at all. This film really centers a lot around her character. And it was a very happy change for the film. And overall, I gotta say, this film is a must-see for anyone. Do you need to see the first 2 films to understand what happens in this film? I would say no. It wouldn't hurt. There might be 1 or 2 things that are referenced. The stuff for Bruce Lee, for those, no spoiler alert, but I guess there is a little bit of spoiler alert. Bruce Lee is in the film. Not obviously the actual Bruce Lee, but an actor playing a young Bruce Lee is seen in the film a couple of times. And as if you don't know, or I'm surprised, but you should know that the story of Ip Man, he is the man who taught Bruce, really was his master, his Sifu. Not from a young boy. I mean, it's not exactly younger than it is in this film, but he does train him, and really Bruce gave him the credit as really being the man that took him to the next level. So, again, if you don't know that, it's very they do talk about it slightly in the film, not a lot, but it's something that's a part of it. But as I said, even if you're not into Bruce Lee and care about that, if you haven't seen the other first two parts, you can still see this part. I would suggest, though, that you do watch the entire trilogy, because each part of the trilogy, there is not a bad movie in them. They're all excellent, excellent films. Donnie is fantastic. Something about Donnie that really strikes me when I watch this trilogy, there's a little mannerism he does. There's this little smile that he makes throughout the trilogy. The Ip Man smile, I call it. And the reason why I bring it up is because I've met Donnie. I'm not trying to say we're friends. We're not. I met him twice at autograph signings. But I've seen him speak live, and I've seen him smile, and I've seen him smile in other films. And I feel his natural smile is not the smile he uses here. He uses this different smile, but it's just something about it. And it's so consistent throughout the three films that I call it the Ip Man smile. And it's just that small detail, which probably would go right by anybody. But he does it in these films, and I just think that it's just a small tidbit to the character, which I'm imagining that's how the actual Ip Man smiled. Just little things like that. Like I said, I gush over this film. I really love it. Check out the entire trilogy. It's amazing. And in my opinion, this one is the best of the series. I give it an 8.5 out of 10. Highly recommended. I actually saw this in the theater here in New York. And as of now, that was at the time the only way to watch it. But it has just been released in Asia on Blu-ray and DVD. And it should be being released here in America very soon. So look for that and pick up a copy. You'll enjoy the film. Okay, our next film, as we, I rambled a little bit there on it, man. Sorry about that, guys. Our next film is The Mermaid, 2016 Hong Kong. This is directed by Stephen Chow, who we talked about on our last show as one of my favorite comedic Asian actors, known for Kung Fu Hustle, From Beijing with Love and Shaolin Soccer, also many other films. He's directed and acted in. Now, this one he did not act in. I think Journey to the West, which was his last film he directed, he also did not act in. Usually he does act in his films, but I guess he's kind of put himself now more behind the camera. That's both a good and a bad thing, I think, as we move on here. But the film does star a man by the name of Deng Chow, who plays Lu Zhua. He's basically known for the trilogy, the Four trilogy, if you've seen those Hong Kong action films. He's known for that, not much else. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything else. I haven't even seen the entire Four trilogy yet. Shame on me. Also starring Lin Yun as Shan, the mermaid, and what I believe is her big screen debut. I don't think she might have done some TV, but I don't think she's done any big screen films before this. And she was great, by the way. Show Lo as Octopus. He was in Journey to the West, Conquering the Demons. That was directed by Steven. He was a very, very, I guess he still is, I shouldn't say was, a very big pop star in Korea. He's a K-pop star. And so he's a very big star there. And also starring Zhang Yuqi. I hope I'm saying that right. She plays Wulan. She was in CJ7, another of Steven's earlier films. Thought she did a great job in this film as well. My tagline for the film is, "Love is magical." So what is this one about? Well, a rich playboy businessman falls in love with what at the time he is unknown to be a mermaid that was actually sent to assassinate him for him unknowingly harming her people. Well, this was really, to me, a throwback to the classic madcap Stephen Chow comedies of my youth, which is what made me a huge Stephen Chow fan. Now, while Deng Chow does not have the same comedic skills as Stephen, he does an okay job. Lin Yun, though, is great here. Not only strikingly beautiful, but she seemed to have a very sincere on-screen presence which is not easy to display in this type of film. As I said, it's a madcap comedy, a lot of silliness, a lot of physical humor. And I think sometimes in a film like that, it's hard to show your acting chops, so to speak. But she does that. I think there's a very bright future for this young woman, Lin Yun. And I would tell you to remember her name and look for her in the future. I have a good feeling about her. The comedy is not always spot on, but there are some very amusing scenes, especially with the octopus character, which is laugh out funny, some of his scenes. There are also some scenes, though, that felt a bit heavy for a comedy. The story is, of course, nothing too intricate for the setting. Basically, when I gave you what the film was about, I mean, that's pretty much sums it up. There are one or two twists and turns, but the film makes sense, kind of, as much sense that a race of mer people is going to be. But, you know, in that context, the film follows pretty much some good logic. Like I said, I found the film... I moved ahead of myself. I should also say I saw this in 3D. Saw this actually right after I saw Ant Man 3 the same day. And like I said, it was in 3D. And like many 3D films, I kind of thought it wasn't really necessary. At least they didn't do that cornball purposely having things fly at you for no reason gimmick that you see in many 3D films. But I'm like over the whole 3D thing. I actually prefer to watch the film not in 3D. But at the time when I was at the theater, the only showing was a 3D showing. And so I watched it. I mean, it didn't disrupt my enjoyment of the film at all. But I wanted to point out, it is 3D. It was released in 3D, but I don't feel the 3D lent anything extra to the film. I don't think seeing it in a non-3D setting would make it any better or worse. Overall, this is a cute film, really. That's the best thing I could say. It's a cute film. Nothing I would probably try to see again. Not that if it was on, I would be like, oh, I can't watch this. But it's not something I would really try hard to sit through again. But, I mean, it's not something that I think you wouldn't enjoy. I gave it a 5.5 out of 10, which might be a little low. You know, I'm not big on comedies, although I do love Stephen Chow comedies. And I think if you also are a fan of Stephen Chow and his films and his type of comedy, then you should definitely enjoy this film. And you should check it out, The Mermaid. Okay, it's time for our old school selection. Had a hard time picking old school selection this time. I've kind of been on a Chang Che Venom's kick lately, but I didn't want to review another one so quickly. So I searched for a film that I've been hearing about for years and never got around to watching, and it's called Battles Without Honor and Humanity. And this is from 1973 in Japan, directed by Kenji Fukasaku, who is the director for Cops and Thugs, which we've spoken about on an earlier podcast, Shogun Samurai, and The Great Battle Royale. So, this is Kenji's, but many people feel, is his signature film, not Battle Royale. Not sure I agree with that, but I've heard more than one person say that this is his signature film. Starring Bunta Sugawara, who plays Sozo Hirono. He was in Cops and Thugs that we spoke about. Hiroki Matsukata, who plays Tetsuya Sakai. He was also in Cops and Thugs. He was also in Shogun Samurai. And Nobu Kaneko, who plays Yoshiro Yamamori. He was in the movie Shogun, The Yakuza Graveyard. And yes, he was in Cops and Thugs. Tagline for this film is, the only sure thing about this life is death. So what's this about? A young ex-soldier is indoctrined into the world of the Yakuza and all its inner workings, which include politics, extortion, and yes, murder. So after seeing the really enjoying Cops and Thugs, I definitely wanted to see Fukasaku's much more famous film, This also, by the way, I didn't mention this earlier, some might know this as the Yakuza Papers, which was a series of films made by Fukasaku. But this was the first one and the most famous. Right from the very start, this film is got to be the most frenetic-paced film I've ever seen. You almost want to pause at some point just to take a breath. Coupled with his famous shaky camera style, and this film is almost an attack on the senses. Took me a bit to like kind of align my mind with it. The story is kind of told in a newsreel style, you know, along with a narrator. This makes it quite a different film. The thing about this is, while you don't get every character's motivation here, it's okay. Maybe because we know most of this actually happened. You know, most of this film is based on true events. Now, we don't get a lot of characters' motivations of why they do things and certain stuff like that, but I don't know. I'm okay with it. Sometimes I'm not. I was okay with it here. The acting of Bunta Sugawara is excellent, as it was in Cops and Thugs. The others range from very good to not so much. There is one particular scene, though, where all the murderous gangsters begin weeping uncontrollably, which was almost as absurd as it was funny. No one will ever convince me that this actually took place. But other than that, good stuff. The score was a bit interesting. Not something which I talk about that often, but here had a really major impact on many of the scenes. At first, a lot of it came off as weird choices, but later, it really seemed to work. It lent character to the film. So, yeah, if you see it and you see this film and you hear the score and think, well, that's a weird choice, which I would have been right along with you. But give it, let the movie can continue, and I think you kind of warm up to it. But the only thing that really stood out for me was how, unlike many other gangster films made in Asia, this one didn't try to glamorize the whole brotherhood aspect. These are not righteous men. They really are only loyal to their own needs. And it's a much more gritty look at the life of a gangster. And in that it's most redeeming quality, really. Because sometimes I feel a lot of these films you see do glamorize the criminal lifestyle and what have you, and the brotherhood, and how, you know, yes, we're quote-unquote bad guys, but we have a code. And like, no, I don't believe that's true in real life, and it's not true in this film, which is why I think many people consider this to be the most realistic film about the Yakuza life, and I think that's why they feel that way. Still, and I might be heavily criticized for this, but I found this to be somewhat less than the aforementioned Cops and Thugs. And I think the reason is quite obvious, and that's character development, which is where I found this film failed. I really felt nothing for these people. You know, you want to root for Shouzo, but not overly so. And this is a big thing for me in films. I need to be invested in the story and what's occurring. But I felt a disconnection here. Maybe it was the newsreel style that did that. Maybe it's the fact that the characters had very few redeeming qualities. I'm not sure. But it's not a bad film, and one that any fan of the genre definitely should see. I give it a 6 out of 10. This is not on Netflix. It might be on Hulu Plus. I procured a copy of it, so that's how I saw it. But I do believe that there's a ton of great Yakuza films from the 70s on Hulu Plus. And so I'm pretty sure I saw this on there listed. So if you wanted to watch this film. If not, there are eBay. You can get this on eBay. You can get this on Amazon. This film is pretty easily to locate. Okay. Time for our wild card selection of the show. And, oh, this was one I've been waiting to get to. This is The Host, 2006, out of Korea. directed by my favorite Korean director, and I would say probably in my top, I'm going to say my top five, because off the top of my head, I don't want to feel like I left somebody out. It might be top three, but definitely in my top five favorite directors in the world, and that's Bong Joon-ho. What has Bong Joon-ho done? Well, we talked about what I think, you know, might be his best film, if it's not this, and that's Memories of Murder. He's also done Mother, which was a very good, in my opinion, underrated film. And Snowpiercer. Some of you might have saw that. It came out a year or two ago to wide audiences in America. And that was his first, I guess, American / Korean joint venture, and a great film in itself. And starring right now, it's a close with him and Andy Lau, but, you know, definitely my favorite Korean actor of all time. Might be my favorite Asian actor right now. And that's Song Kang-ho, or Kang-ho Song, depends on how you say his name. For the podcast, I usually go Song Kang-ho. I try to make it more official, but usually when I'm speaking to people, I refer to him as Kang-ho Song. He plays Gang-do. And Kang-ho Song was, of course, the star of Memories of Murder, Sympathy of Mr. Vengeance, The Face Reader, The Attorney, so many other great films. I don't think the man's ever made a bad film. Also starring Byun-hee Bong, who plays He-Bong. Only his family name is Park, so he's Park He-Bong. Memories of Murder, Haunters, great film. Volcano High, Park Hae-il, who plays Park Nam-il. Funny how these names are pretty close to the real ones, huh? He also was in Memories of Murder, the film Moss, and he starred in Whistleblower that came out about a year and a half ago. And then, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, but I believe it's Bae Doona, who plays Park Nam-joo. And she was in Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, and you might know her better, she was in the film Cloud Atlas and Jupiter Ascending. So you might remember her from those films. And Go Ah-sun, who plays Hyun-so. She was in Snowpiercer, and she was the lead in a film that we reviewed on here a couple of episodes ago, Office, that fantastic Korean thriller. My tagline for this film is, you don't want this dinner invitation. So, this one, what is it about? A young girl is captured by a monster, and her dysfunctional family must come together to find her. Now I know, I tell you that and half of you turned off the podcast. But don't, if you haven't turned off yet, stop. Trust me, this film is better than what I'm telling you it's about. First off, I credit this film as being one of the main starting points for the Korean film explosion. At the time of its release, it became the highest grossing film in Korean history. That's 2006. And it held that title into 2014. It's still listed as number 4 all time. This film has been greenlit for sequels, prequels, and an American remake. But nothing has materialized, and I hope it never does. Some films are too important, too remarkable, to be sullied with another installment. And this is such a film. The story is multidimensional. It's not a straight horror film, but it's damn scary at times. It's not a straight comedy, but it's laugh out loud funny at times. It's a story of feel-good moments and tragic moments that will bring a tear to your eye. The gamut of emotions that you run through while watching this film will astound you. Even this, my third screening of this film, and it felt like my first. I felt so much emotion watching this film. Like, how many times have you watched the film, and in the middle of watching the film, you're understanding what a great film this is? And every time I see it, it's like the first time. There are so many reasons why this works. But in my opinion, the biggest is the acting from a sensational cast that I just ran down at the top. This is the film that turned Song Kang-ho from a star to the biggest star in Korea, and outside of Jackie Chan, very possibly the biggest star in all of Asia. But it's not him carrying this. Go Ah-sung is splendid, as is the rest of her kooky family. The pace of the story, the subplot of the government trying to round up the family for fear of them being infected by a virus, added to the sense of desperation for these characters. Director Bong masterfully draws you in with the sublime to the absurd. This shouldn't be viewed as some monster film, quote-unquote, like a Godzilla or a Gamera. It's not. And I love those films, not knocking them at all. I am a huge, giant kaiju fan. But this is something different. It's about people, flawed, a little crazy. What they have in common is the love for family, and especially one special little girl. I've heard some take issue with the special effects and the look of the monster, but honestly, I find this almost laughable. Have any of you seen a monster in real life? How do you know what it would look like? I just find that to be a crazy thing to talk, to complain about, that the monster didn't look like a real enough monster. Okay, when we see a real monster, then you can make that comment. The CGI used for the creature's movements I found to be top-notch and gave it a very frightening feel. This is a film that is truly on my list of films you must see. I cannot recommend this any more than I am. I give it a 9 out of 10, and it is currently available on Netflix. Check this out now. Turn off the podcast. Well, let me finish. I promise I'll be gone in about 30 more seconds. But once that 30 seconds is over, turn off the podcast, get on Netflix, or go rent it somewhere, find this film, watch The Host. You will come back and you're going to thank me for telling you if you didn't know about this film already. That's our show. I'm going to be back soon as I review the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sequel, and we're going to see what other goodies I pull out for you guys. And until that time, I want to thank you for listening, and bye-bye.